Okay, welcome back, guys. We've got a lot of Survivor stuff to talk about today. We're going to move a lot of the Amazing Race stuff to a separate podcast because we had some difficulty recording that, getting it uploaded in time. As we are recording this, it's Sunday the 25th, so we should have tonight's episode included of the Amazing Race included with that as well. But for now, we're just talking all Survivor, and to do that, we're joined by the unintentional mastermind behind Amanda Kimmel's third place Miss Survivor campaign, Koz Kozlowski. Koz, how are you doing?
Excellent, guys, and yes, I do still hate Amanda. Proud of it. How are you guys doing?
I'm excellent. I'm here too. I'm Colin. Hi.
we're good. So where do you guys want to begin? I think the obvious place is Colton.
If I can jump in here, I think what we're going to be basically doing today, this is going to be a bit different than most of our weekly episodes. This week we're going to be focusing much more on the strategy, which is a big, we've been eager to have Koz on for a while, I guess, and this is finally, I think, a suitable time. What we're going to do is talk about the last episode the same way similar to how we always do, but basically just with a focus on Colton. And then after that, we're going to be talking about the merge that we now know just happened and where every individual player left in the game stands entering that merge. And so, again, we'll be beginning with the general Colton discussion. This last episode is the one where we saw Colton end up getting the medevac. And Koz, I think we should start with you. There was speculation about who was going to be medevac, and I think Colton was overlooked because he was such a big and kind of evil character that people imagined the producers wouldn't be setting up as a medevac just because he seemed like he was going to be such a long-lasting character. What were your first thoughts about Colton being the one medevac, Koz?
I got to say, I was disappointed. I know that most people that we talk Survivor with, they seem to hate Colton, but I got to say, as a fan of the show, I hate Colton, but I love him on my television. He's an entertaining guy. You know, say what you want about his personality, but he is, to use a Cesarino-ism, the straw that stirs the drink. So I was really disappointed to see him go down. I was really surprised it was him. I thought it was going to be maybe Tarzan or one of the, less fit guys. Not to say that Colton is fit. But, very disappointed to see him go out this way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people were kind of hoping he would end up a much more bitter demise in terms of some epic blindside that he seemed to be getting set up for. Just in terms of, we all saw kind of an exit on Colton's behalf that the viewing audience was going to be very pleased with. For me personally, I was thrilled to see him suffer, first of all. I thought that was the best part. And Colton, I was once again stunned that it was actually, in fact, Colton, although I was thrilled that it wasn't Kim, as I was fearing. For the whole week leading up prior to it. Dom, what thoughts did you have, just first thoughts about Colton being the medevac?
Well, firstly, I was kind of embarrassed because I said last episode that I was 100% sure that it wouldn't be Colton. We'll ignore that, or we'll move on. Beyond that, yeah, I agree. I think if you're going to have someone like Colton who you spend the first half of the season building up as this big villain, there needs to be some payoff at the end of that. That has to be something more than just him getting taken out on a stretcher in a fairly anticlimactic way. Like, you know, with someone like Colton or a bigger villain like Fairplay or whatever, that there's going to come a time where they're going to get blindsided, they're going to get voted out, or they're going to get reamed by the jury. And you know that that's going to be a good spectacle no matter what it is. This way, it just, I don't know.
I think the kind of the concern now is that the show has obviously lost a massive character, and the big debate that's been going on this basically is whether or not Colton being on Survivor is good or bad for the show. And I know, Koz, you have a very strong opinion about this, that I think you alluded to a bit earlier about, do you want to go into that a bit about Colton being such a big character and so polarizing, your views about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I got to say, Ross, that I dislike Colton as much as almost anybody who's ever been on the show. I can't say that I enjoy his, ripping on people. He really takes it to a whole new level where it's not even about gameplay. It's just, he's a 20-year-old kid. He's doing personal attacks. There's nothing really fun behind it, but at the same time, everything that he touches, turns into crap, and so that makes the entire story around him fantastic. I mean, as evil as Alicia is, she gets 10 times more evil when Colton is around her, and whether that's enjoyable or not for you, it creates drama around the camp. So, yeah, I mean, Colton may be a despicable person, but he is the guy who's creating all these storylines, and I'm afraid, we're like a Tarzan medevac away from this being, 10 or 11 pretty normal people who really aren't going to do anything too crazy. So I'm upset to see Colton go, whether I like him or not.
And now Colton obviously was painted as this big character, and the question becomes whether or not we're going to see him play again. What kind of thoughts do you have about that?
I don't think there's any question. I will bet anyone any type of money, Colton will be back. And if you need proof of that, I know some people have argued against it. The proof is that we've spent now 10 minutes at the beginning of your podcast on a show that he's not even on anymore talking about Colton. He is the number one topic on this season, probably the number one topic of the last three or four seasons aside from maybe Boston Rob winning. So he will absolutely be back. There is no question about it.
Yeah, he's certainly been the biggest, you know, people in the thread referring to him as like the water cooler. People are talking about Colton around the water cooler for the first time. People are talking about Survivor around the water cooler since probably Russell Hance, in terms of a new character. And you know, I've mentioned it on the show before. The reason Dom initially got into Survivor is hearing about Russell Hance, just all the way over in England. Yeah, Dom, what do you think about Colton returning or not?
Yeah, I think Cole is right. He's definitely going to come back at some point.
See, I'm actually of the different school of thought. I do not think we will see Colton back. I think he had an out. I think the vast majority of people who watched this season despised Colton and excuse me, Empire at a Cost. I know you mentioned in the thread, and Gary also mentioned a quote from the Howard Stern movie Private Parts, where Howard, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's basically a biopic about Howard Stern's life and how he became this big star and the king of all media, which is probably the most outdated nickname of all time, but he still calls himself that. And how, you know, the whole appeal was people didn't like him necessarily, but they always wanted to see what he would say next. And I know, Koss, you're someone who, when it comes to Colton, argues that side. And I honestly, I see it quite differently. I think Colton was drove many people away from the show. I think he was an absolutely despicable human being. I think CBS, if they were going to bring him back, wouldn't make him so universally unlikable. I don't know how anyone justifies, honestly, rooting for Colton. And I think that's a big part of what they need. But, you know, Koss, you mentioned that you think we will see him back. How do you think he would do were he to play again?
He would do terrible. He's going to do exactly like Russell Hance did on Redemption Island, which I think is an interesting topic to bring up, because you can go ahead and mark this down in pencil somewhere. Season 26, let's say, will be Russell Hance versus Colton Cumby. And the reason it will be is because we talked about it for a while. Russell needs a bigger villain to come along to where the focus is not put on Russell being the most evil guy out there. They're going to use Colton, who will go out very quickly, and Russell will go, he really wasn't that bad. He's not as bad as Colton. So I don't think Colton will be brought back to be a superstar or anything like that. But much like Russell was with Boston Rob, they will use him to deflect the amount of evil that comes out of Russell's mouth. So I think we will absolutely see Colton back in that type of alpha male to returning player type of season here in, I would say, within the next three or four Survivor seasons.
Interesting. Now, obviously, Russell is a very popular comparison for Colton because he was the most controversial figure, certainly in recent memory, perhaps ever, as a character on the show. But I think many people, myself included, would assert Colton took it to an entirely different level. Colton was based around hate and made it deeply and almost purely personal. And whereas Russell's focus was almost always entirely on, I want to get to the end, I will do whatever it takes. I'm sure he played up being as heartless of a bastard as he possibly could, and obviously we saw that cost him the game twice. But I think there's a very there's a giant gap between how Colton acts and how Russell acted on the show. Do you have any do you agree, disagree with that?
Oh no, I absolutely agree with that. I think everyone knows I'm a big Russell fan. I think he does things to help his game, whereas Colton is just petty about, you know, how this person looks or how they act or how much money they make. But at the end of the day, you know, I think Gary Wise was the one who explained it this way, that if you're driving the road and you see a car crash, you know, a bunch of dead bodies, anyone who is looking away is lying to you when they say they look away. Everyone looks over at the car crash, and that's exactly what we see with Colton. I think as much as everybody loves to say, you know, how much they hate him and how much they hate watching him on TV, there's some part of them that says, I can't look away from my television when he's on because I want to see what he's going to do.
If I can make a counter argument, you know, and again, to bring up the Howard Stern thing and kind of like a car crash, Colton, I think, is, again, just a different level of what he's going to do next is just going to be some even more exaggerated form of just hate speech. Whereas with Howard and with a car crash, it's something that people are truly interested in seeing. Like with Howard, you know, Howard, it's always, you know, racy, very racy and sexual, which people say, you know, in public say, oh, I'm not interested in any of that. But everyone knows people are interested in that, and Howard understands that better than anyone on the planet and has made a killing doing that. Whereas with Colton, it's truly just what minority group is he going to blatantly offend next?
Yeah, and that's a great argument, and I don't disagree with it. I just think at the end of the day, CBS looks at it and says, who's going to give us the most ratings? And the only person I've ever felt on the entire 24 seasons that I've looked at and felt the same way about, where I just find nothing entertaining about them, was Mayanka a few seasons ago. But at the end of the day, I certainly wouldn't refuse to watch if Mayanka was on again, as much as that pains me to say. And I think that's what you're going to see with CBS. They may realize that Colton's a horrible guy, but at the end, it's going to get more people. I could be wrong, but I think in a few seasons, we're definitely going to see Colton back.
It's certainly well within the realm of possibility. And now I think the next kind of thing to talk about before we move on to the players currently in the game, and again, every second we spend talking about Colton is me arguing against my own point, obviously, because what CBS wants is people talking about the show, which is exactly what we're doing, and Colton absolutely brings discussion to the table, but I think it's for the wrong reasons. But what we do need, I think something else worth discussing, is kind of the fallout from his behavior on the show. Now, Dom, I think you probably have the best grip on all of this out of the three of us in terms of keeping track of the post-exit interviews and everything like that. Do you know how Colton's been acting post-show and if he's what he's been saying? Because I'm weary of listening to the Rochester Nino the exit interviews, because I'm so fearful of spoilers, and from what I understand, there may have been perhaps a bit too much speculation on Colton's part or whatever. How's Colton been responding now that he's gone off the show and can talk to everyone?
Right. Colton, in his interviews, has given the appearance of being utterly repentant. So, yeah, he's a changed man. He regrets everything he's done. Whether or not that's true, you can judge it yourself. I actually had the chance to talk with Colton a few times, and in person, he did seem to be sorry about what he did. But I don't know. I think he went on the show and discovered more about himself than he would care to admit. And yeah, I think a lot of people go through that during the early 20s and stuff, but he did it on national TV in front of tens of millions of people and did it in a way which it made a lot of those people hate him. And I don't feel sorry for him, but I think, you know, just tearing him down and calling him names isn't going to accomplish anything at this point.
No, and I agree. And I think the way I kind of look at it, I think, is about probably 10 years from now or so, Colton's going to look back on this first Survivor experience and either be very ashamed of what he did and how he behaved, or very proud of it. And I'm sincerely hoping he's ashamed of it. But if he ends up being the kind of person who looks back on this experience and doesn't regret a minute of it, Colton, if you're out there listening 10 years from now, and if you're still proud of how you acted on that island, kill yourself.
Throw yourself in the fire, yeah.
Or throw yourself in the fire and get medevaced from life, yeah. But it is truly despicable. And again, it costs, I know every second I spend talking about this is just more reason CBS probably will bring, or potentially could bring, Colton back.
I'm sorry, if you can't see that Colton's coming back, then you are Helen Keller.
Well played.
Yeah, the thing with Colton is that I don't think he's fully changed. I think the defense he's been given is that a lot of the stuff he said was his own brand of humor that was taken out of context and misinterpreted. But you have to realize, when you're going on a TV show where lots of strangers are going to be watching you, and when you're going into a game where you're playing with strangers, you can't rely on them to be able to receive that in the way that you might like. And I think he's too proud to admit that, you know, he's acting in a way which he can't reasonably expect people to interpret in such a benevolent way.
I think in many ways he actually enjoys how much publicity, positive or negative, that he gets out of this. And I think even though he may seem sorry, I don't buy it. You know, he came on a couple of exit interviews that I listened to and just, you know, said, oh, you know, I'm a changed man, blah, blah, blah. But I don't buy it. I think he loves that he is so evil and hated and, you know, is at least who everyone is talking about at this point. So maybe that'll change a few years down the road, but I don't think so. I think he loves this on every level.
Yeah, I think if we end up seeing him play again, I don't think we're going to see much change if it's within a reasonably short amount of time. If not, if it's, you know, as Survivor's coming to a close, however many years from now, and they're just bringing back all of the big characters ever. I think if it's anytime soon, we're going to see a very similar Colton if we see him play again. I think the next thing we should talk about, the way we're going to be kind of doing the rest of this episode, talking about each player one at a time and their position entering the merge, and the way we're going to be kind of formatting that is we're going to begin with the people who that we think have less of a chance. And I think obviously the top of that list is Alicia. Alicia is someone who I think at the merge now is completely drawing dead to win. There is absolutely no way she can pull off a victory here, partially because of her relationship with Colton. And as we saw in this previous episode, her just for one example, her behavior towards Christina. Koch, what do you think about Alicia in terms of her behavior, the beginning, and how that's going to play out?
You know, she's despicable. She's as bad or worse than Colton in my mind. I don't find her particularly entertaining, you know, but she is there to stir up drama, and that's what she's going to do. I don't think she's going to go too far, and like you said, you know, she's not only drawing dead now, she's been drawing dead since they jumped on the plane to fly out there. But I think, you know, she's a little too risky to take to the end as a goat, just because who knows what she's going to do. I think she's probably got 3 or 4 more episodes in her, and then she's going to get blindsided and, you know, be a typical bitter juror.
She's the sort of person who you would love to have there in your final three with you, but actually engineering that and bringing that about is more difficult than it might be worth. I think she's a level above people like Shampoo and Dreams in that she does seem to be thinking about the game in some kind of rational way, but I think that's because she's deluded herself into thinking that she actually has a chance. And, you know, no one is going to be able to disabuse of that notion until potentially she comes to the final phase of GOAT and then gets 0 votes.
But Alicia's an interesting player to me because, you know, as I mentioned, she's drawing stone cold dead to win. But she's but I think everyone else on the island is very aware of that. And she could become, like you mentioned, a GOAT. The question obviously then becomes whether or not she, her kind of like spastic tendencies in terms of she's very unpredictable, I would say, as a player, whether those could come back to burn you in your attempt to drag her along for an easy win in the finals.
Yeah, she's a scary one to try to take to the end. I think she, you can't believe a word she says. She doesn't seem to, I mean, I know I agree with you, Dom, on some level that, you know, she does seem to have some thought behind it. But at the end of the day, she's the type that, you know, she's too crazy to keep around just because you never know what she's going to do 3 days from now. So I think it's way too risky to take her to the end of as a goat. If you can only beat Alicia, you probably didn't play a good enough game to get there anyway.
That's true. But, I mean, if you're one of the other potential goats, you probably have to take that risk just because, you know, you want to at least be drawing life to win rather than just be playing for second place.
That's really true, but I think you can certainly take someone like, you know, Tarzan or Michael, who, you know, they may be a little weird and capable of big moves, but I think at the end of the day, nobody, you know, really has any respect for them. They haven't done anything. I think much safer people to keep around if you're trying to, you know, sort of orchestrate your way to the final three. I think those are the people you focus on taking instead of crazy Alicia.
Well, we'll get on to Tarzan in a minute, but I think he suffers from the same problem, is that you can't effectively control him. So even if it's in his best interest to stick with you and go along with whatever you're planning, he's not necessarily going to know that. And so it might be better for people who are looking for goats to look at someone like Kat, maybe, who is at least pliable, and she's not going to fly off the rails just at random.
Absolutely. Kat's a good one. I think Christina's another really good one.
Right.
Yeah, there's some that are much safer than Alicia or, like you said, even Tarzan. I think you got to look for those safe goats who, you know, maybe they have a slightly higher percentage chance of beating you, but, you know, 2% isn't much higher than 1%. So I think it's much better to take the safe, dumb person than the crazy one.
Yeah, I think that's typically a very solid concept to be aware of in Survivor. I think we're all kind of in agreement. Alicia can't win. I'm sure we're all in agreement about that. So I think but I don't know that that's the case for pretty much anyone else left in the field. You know, there are some people who have been under-edited to this point, but like we saw last episode, I would have said Christina had been under-edited, and she's the next one I want to talk about, because she's obviously got some work to do, and she wants to somehow pull a win out of here. So let's talk about Christina for a bit. Koch, what do you think Christina needs to do to kind of improve her position in the game now entering a merge?
I think she's too far gone. I think I don't see any way that she can salvage her game at this point, simply because she's burned half the bridges in the game already. Whether that's, you know, her fault or Alicia's fault, I don't see her being in a position where she has the capability to flip any kind of vote. Her best chance is to try to wedge herself in between, say, 4-person alliances. But I just think it's going to be too hard, and quite frankly, I just don't think she has the skills to be able to engineer that kind of move.
Right. When we're talking about Christina, I think what we're interested in is not how she can win the game, but how her presence in the game is going to affect the chances of other people. And it's an important topic because at the moment she seems to be kind of a floater in that she doesn't have close allegiances to anybody left in the game. So she's somebody who a good player can snap up and drag along potentially as a loyal goat.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's a great person to bring along because at this point, she's going to align with the next person that talks to her. She has absolutely nothing in this game. She thought she was going home, you know, right before the sudden merge there. So I think she's a great person to take to the end. She's not going to try to make a move on you. I think she's, at this point, going to be happy to just ride your coattails to the final three and get third place.
Interesting. I think I kind of disagree with you two about that. I think Christina, you know, she was obviously quiet for a while, and I absolutely agree that she's going to have a hard time herself orchestrating some kind of uprising and taking control of the game anytime soon. But that being said, I think there is a ton of time left, and there's a ton of game left to be played, and if she can survive a couple boots, maybe she can make something happen. I think someone in her position, someone, and I think Michael is in the same position for the guys, who we'll be getting to. Obviously, we're going to be getting to everyone. Where if he can fade a couple tribal councils, maybe a key immunity win, and this now back to Christina, a ton of stuff can go wrong for a lot of different people if you just let them mess it up themselves and swoop in and pick up the pieces, as we've seen several winners throughout the course of history do. I think there's just too much time left for me to really have Christina completely off my potential winners list. And as I mentioned, I think Alicia at this point is the only one who I cannot possibly see winning. Christina, although I do agree with generally what you're saying, which is she's got it's going to be really, really difficult, and by no means do I think she has a very good shot. But I would still say, you know, better than 0%, which take that for what it's worth, which is not much. But I still think there's at least hope.
I'll give you that she's higher than Alicia because Alicia's at 0, and I guess there's some slight chance that Christina could sneak through. But I feel like the only way it would happen is if she gets to the final three, not because of her doing, but because of someone else's, and then that person and the person they're sitting next to both really mess up at tribal. I mean, the comparison, I was trying to think of someone who, you know, snuck into the final three and had a chance to win, and the only name that could come to mind was Susie from Gabon in, you know, maybe the worst final three ever. But even Susie had, she had friends, and I just don't see Christina really having anybody she can go to right now other than maybe Jonas. So I think it's going to be a huge uphill battle for her, and I, quite frankly, I just don't think she's smart enough to pull it off.
Yeah, both Christina and Mike, who, as you said, we're getting to, they remind me a bit of someone like Eliza from Fans vs. Favorites, where they're in a position where it's probably not correct for them to leave the game at that point, but the fact that they have no allies just leads people to agree on them as a kind of consensus boot. And I think we saw the same thing with Alina in Nicaragua as well.
Yeah, I think with Christina, more than likely what we're seeing is she got that big episode because she's probably going to be going soon, but CBS liked her as a person and wanted her to come off well. And I think, generally speaking, you know, if we want to talk about the new merge tribe, I think what we're going to see is, this is not any kind of big shocking revelation, is a kind of a Kim and Jonas power struggle, which we're going to be saving, by the way, Kim and Jonas for the very end of this podcast to keep you guys hooked. But I think Christina could be a casualty of war in terms of both, neither of them kind of wants to draw first blood, and we may see someone like Christina or, again, someone like Michael be the first to go kind of as a sign of good faith between one to the other. And Christina's episode last week may be her getting set up to feel like she was a decent person, which I absolutely believe she is. So let's move on now, I guess. I think the next person I want to talk about is Kat, because Kat's someone who I think you guys both view as goats, and Kat's someone Koth, I know you love Andrea Belke, and I feel like Kat may be that girl for me throughout Survivor history, where it seems like, you know, she takes such a beating from everyone through the first five episodes, and actually got a ton of praise, which I was thrilled to see for her performance in this last episode. Koth, what do you think about Kat entering this merge?
I find Kat, you know, hysterical in sort of a bad way, if that makes sense. I don't love her on the level you do. I can see why you do, though. She's fun to watch. I mean, the appendix thing for me is one of the highlights of the season so far. She just, and I know this is an easy comparison to Meg. In fact, I think she made it herself, but she is Fabio. And I agree, she's not drawing dead. I think, you know, she is a goat in the same way that Fabio was a goat. But at the end of the day, she's likable enough in an odd sort of way that I think, you know, there are scenarios where she's sitting next to, you know, say, Christina and somebody else, and the jury's mad at that first person. They're not going to vote for Christina, so, hey, let's vote for Kat. You know, she she farts and she laughs and does dumb stuff, but at the end of the day, we like her. So I think she's a Flavio clone on every level.
Yeah, that's a comparison that we've made a couple times, and that's kind of why I have Kat not drawing dead, because she's getting the same edit that Flavio got for the most part, although probably more visible.
Yeah, well, the thing about your comparison there is that Kat is being portrayed as a comedy figure, but I think they downplayed just how stupid Flavio was in an effort to make him, you know, more acceptable, if you like, as a winner, because we frequently got these confessionals about Flavio saying, oh, my strategy is just to, you know, play dumb or whatever, when, in fact, he wasn't playing dumb, he just is dumb, but you know, they wanted to give that impression so that fans of strategy who watch the show would be happier with his win. Kat isn't getting that sort of treatment, I think. She's just there for a few cheap laughs.
I think Alicia is a big part of how Kat could eventually come out to win. I think it would take, I'm not overly optimistic about Kat as a winner, but I'm very reluctant to write her off, and I'm not writing her off at this point whatsoever. This is specifically because Alicia is still there and things can happen. I think for Kat to win, she certainly needs two mega goats with her in the finals, and I think one of them probably has to be in the form of Alicia. So I guess, Kost, the question for you is, do you think Kat and Alicia and what would it take for them to kind of make the finals? I imagine probably a strong women's alliance.
I guess, because they're going to have to, the only way those two can get there together is, oddly enough, if Alicia is the one calling the shots, which I think is going to be tough. I think it would take basically picking off all the men really early, and then you have like the, you know, Kim, Chelsea, Sabrina group on one side, and then Alicia gathers up, you know, Kat and, you know, say Tarzan and one other person, and, you know, kind of works their way from the final seven and then gets there with, you know, Alicia, Kat, and, you know, somebody in the final three. It doesn't really matter who. That's the only way I can really see her winning, but I don't think it's completely out of the question, though I think it would make it a pretty terrible season in the end.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure I like Kat a lot more than most, and I'm certainly rooting for her. I want to see her on TV as long as possible. I'm a huge fan. Kat, baby, I love you. I hope you're doing. I hope you do well.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Whatever. Cut me off. Go, Dom. Go.
Okay. So, moving on in general. So on to Sabrina now. What do we think about Sabrina? Because in the first few episodes, she was built up as a big character. We got into her mind a lot. We were told what she thought about the game. She was portrayed as a pretty good leader of her tribe, and when she was anointed leader, it wasn't in a manner where it was clear they were intending to tear her down because of it. You know, it was clear they had genuine admiration for her. So she seems to be in a pretty good spot, but I'm not convinced she has what it takes to come out of this with a win. What do you guys think?
I agree with you. I think she's a little too passive for my taste. I think if you look at who her allies might be, they're not good ones. They would have to be the Kats and the Alicias and, you know, sort of the misfits. I think she's going to have a tough time stealing control away from Kim and Chelsea, who, you know, my personal feeling is that those two are in charge. And I won't spoil my my final three pick right now, but I think at least one of them will be there. And I think ultimately what you're going to see Marina is she's going to stay loyal to them one or two votes too long, and then she's going to get caught in a position where it's too late for her to make a move. I think she's just a little too passive, and she's going to end up falling just a spot or two short of the finals.
Right. I think this is best illustrated when, in the episode where the tribes are swapped, we see Sabrina longing for Kim to be on a tribe, and she was happy when Kim drew the same color buff as her, but then Kim just didn't seem to care at all. I think Sabrina has a level of loyalty to Kim that isn't reciprocated, and I think it's going to come back to bite her eventually.
Yeah, I would actually agree with pretty much all of what you guys are saying. I think Sabrina, I would agree. I think she's overly loyal at this point to Chelsea and Kim, and like you said, I think she's probably not making any plans anytime soon to change that loyalty. And I think if she did, somewhere down the line, recognize how much power Kim has, especially if she ever finds out about the idol, which we don't know that she knows yet. We only know Chelsea knows about it. Although I would suspect at some point everyone's going to know, and we may find out in post-game, once this is all said and done, that everyone knew the whole time about Kim's idol. I think Sabrina could find herself in a position where, if she wants to, they'll continue staying loyal to her as well, just on the grounds that they don't anticipate her being one to orchestrate a flip. I think she may find herself in a position where it may be advantageous for her to flip, and she probably is not going to take that. And take that opportunity. And I think just to kind of echo what you guys said, I think that loyalty may end up costing her. And I think, Koss, it was actually you who pointed out in the thread that she seems kind of destined for either a second or fourth place finish.
Yeah, I think those are the two spots that make the most sense to me, which I'm sure is weird for some people to hear, but I think it actually makes perfect sense in that she's not going to – I don't think she wins a vote against Kim or Chelsea if one of them are there. So if it's, you know, say Kim, Sabrina, and a goat in the finals, Sabrina gets second, or it's going to be Kim and Chelsea in the finals, and they're going to cut Sabrina out at Final Four because they're afraid that she'll win, since Kim and Chelsea are going to make the same argument at the end. So I think second or fourth is really what we're looking for. I think ultimately it'll be fourth place more than second, but I think she's one that's just going to be a little too passive to get over the hump.
Right. I disagree with something you said at the start. I think Sabrina probably beats Chelsea in a jury vote, and I think people in general are overstating Chelsea's chances. But, yeah, other than that, I agree. And, yeah, and one of the big topics we're going to be getting to is what would happen if the women did band back up together at the merge and make up the final five. And one of the conclusions we drew when we examined this in an earlier podcast was that that endgame is probably unfavorable to Sabrina in general, and we'll be getting onto the reasons why later when we talk about Kim. But for now, though, do we want to talk about Chelsea?
Yeah, I think Chelsea's a good next one to talk about. We're going to save Kim for the end, as I mentioned. So, yeah, let's get into Chelsea. Koss, what do you think about Chelsea's position now entering the merge?
I could make a really dirty sexual comment here, but I will just go ahead and pass.
Go for it.
I think Chelsea. Okay, I would love Chelsea in a number of positions. All right, there you go.
Oh, that was so tame compared. All right, go for it. Yeah, okay, continue. Sorry.
You know, I think Chelsea is beautiful. She seems pretty sharp, you know, not overly intelligent, but sort of, you know, she probably doesn't have a great understanding of Survivor, but she's likable enough that she can kind of get past that. She sort of reminds me almost of like a female Ethan in that nobody's really going to come after her until really late in the game. I think she's in a pretty good position. My only fear is that she's not going to be sharp enough to realize she needs to turn on Kim. So I think ultimately, she's going to end up in probably second place, sitting there and sticking. I just don't think she is going to be as good of a speaker or be able to make the point that she was the mastermind behind everything if she's sitting next to Kim. If she can step back in the final five, I think she could win. I think she's probably the favorite if she does that, but I just don't think the killer instinct is there to win.
Right. I've been bullish about Chelsea's chances from before the show even started. I've never seen in her the qualities that I think a lot of other people have. She doesn't seem intelligent to me at all, and she doesn't seem to have this kind of savvy for the game that I think people were expecting her to. And, I mean, you called her a female Ethan. I think Ethan had a kind of inherent likability that really isn't there with Chelsea. She seems kind of cold to people that she isn't intimately close to. And, yeah, as a reference before, I mean, we'll come back to this, I think an all-female endgame would be conducive to Chelsea winning if she were able to grasp that fact, but I don't think she is, in all honesty. And I don't think she's willing to backstab Kim, whereas Kim would be willing to backstab her. Lastly, one of the things that came up when we talked to Colton, actually, is that Chelsea was on people's radar. Had he survived, had he made the merge, Chelsea would have been his first out because he was trying to cut off Kim's allies while retaining Kim as someone to work with. And I think a lot of people are going to think the same way. They're going to look at Kim and say, well, Kim's made a deal with me, I want to honor that, so let's get rid of Chelsea to weaken Kim. And if that happens, I don't think Chelsea can scramble her way out of it.
Yeah, I think I think Chelsea is going to be someone, like you said, that's going to be staying with Kim, and for better or for worse, and in all likelihood for worse. Koss, I think I know roughly where your final three is going, and I think Chelsea is going to wind up your second-place finisher, although it may honestly be a tie for third if it does, in fact, go 9-0-0 or however many jurors there end up being, assuming it is a final three. I think Chelsea is going to be, much like Sabrina, the loyalty to Kim may end up being what costs her if it does come down, if she does end up playing an endgame with Kim. And I think, you know, it's safe to say at this point that Kim is going to be the front runner in that endgame, assuming she's able to make it to the finals and people are willing to let her get to the finals. And that's, you know, let's save that for the Kim discussion. I guess Chelsea, I think, is going to be around a while. I think she's probably a very likely finalist, given what we've seen. She was certainly much more visible in the early episodes, kind of developing her and getting her on people's on the viewers' radar as, okay, that's Chelsea. We know who that is now. for the race, as opposed to someone like Leaf, even, for instance, where we don't really see him. And I think Leaf, without his stature, people wouldn't really, he'd be like the Rick this season, where we just haven't seen him do all that much. And again, I think Chelsea's just blind loyalty to Kim is probably going to be what ends up costing her, because I really don't think she's willing to stab Kim in the back, and I think that's what it's going to come down to.
I think at the end of the day, the way you got to look at it is Kim doesn't need to backstab Chelsea to win. Chelsea needs to backstab Kim, so that's not a great position for Chelsea to be in.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Well, one question I have for the two of you before we move on. Chelsea, to our knowledge at least, is the only one who knows about Kim's idol. Is there a way in which she can use that knowledge to her advantage, do you think?
I think it's, again, kind of like what we just finished saying, which is she probably could, yes, absolutely, use that information to her advantage, but I personally don't think she will. And we may see that play out completely differently, and maybe she masterminds this uprising against Kim and has some epic blindside, and America's all heartbroken, and Chelsea goes on to end some genius. I guess to answer your question, yeah, I think she absolutely could use that information to benefit her own game and take a severe shot at Kim's game, potentially even blindsiding her and eliminating her. But I honestly, again, for the same reasons we just laid out, I don't think she will. I think she's going to see that and say, oh, Kim and I have an idol. We can use that whenever we want, and then we can get to the finals together. And she may not at least be aware, or even if she is aware, she may not even care, that that's not going to result in her winning too often.
Yeah, I think she can use her knowledge of that idol in a good way, but I think it's bad timing. I think, say the idol is only good through final six. I think that's too early for her to blindside Kim, because in a weird way, she needs Kim to get into the final five. She needs Kim to be the target in the final five in order for Chelsea to get into the final three without Kim. So the timing might be a little off. I think it's possible she could, form a coup at final six or final seven, but I think that just might be too risky. I think she's better off just kind of sitting on her hands until final five and then making that one big move to get Kim out of the game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Chelsea's going to be someone that we're going to see kind of, for the most part, keep her mouth shut and hope things go her way. And in that sense, I think the female Ethan thing is more, it's quite apt in that sense. But like Dom said, I think Ethan is a bit more likable and people inherently just root for Ethan. And I think another thing that may hinder Chelsea is she's not a good speaker. She's going
to
have a, she,
to put
she,
it mildly.
She can't, yeah, she can't, yeah, to put it mildly, she can't really instill much confidence in people. And she's probably not a great saleswoman in terms of leading an uprising. And it's certainly probably not going to be overly eloquent in front of a jury.
Right. Particularly if she has to come across as apologetic for whatever reason. I don't think she can strike the tone that she'd need to in that scenario.
Yeah, okay. So, for the fifth time, whatever, we're going to push Kim and Jonas to the end. So let's move on to the guys. And I think the guy we're going to want to start with is Michael, for the same reasons we talked about Christina, which is Michael's in a very interesting position because he doesn't really seem to have any true allies. And he's kind of just banking on this team, on Solani, at least before the merge, winning out so he can get to the merge. And now where do we see Michael's game kind of shaking out now that we've entered the merge?
Yeah, Mike seems to be in the same position that Christina is, in this kind of Eliza or Alina role, where they have no close allies, so they're on the outs, and they don't really have an obvious way to get in good with anybody. The problem for Mike, beyond that, is I think he's a better player than Christina is, but he's a much more obvious target. Firstly, because of his physical strength, he seems like he'd be pretty good in challenges, but also because, just in general, men are targeted earlier than women are. And it's not clear to me how he can find a way back into the game somehow. I mean, I'm not sure what you guys think.
I think he is not a good player at all. I've not liked Michael since I saw his pregame video. I don't think he's sharp enough. I think he thinks he's much than he is, but at the end of the day, he has no allies. I mean, if you look at the four people he was with at the beginning, it was him, Matt, who's gone, Bill, who's gone, and Jay, who has completely cut ties with him. So I think Mike was just sort of there. I think the Christina comparison is a perfect one. The issue for Michael is that people love to go after physical threats, and he's a very obvious one. I don't think he's going to be around for more than the next three votes. I think he's probably out 11th or 12th, quite frankly, and I don't see him having any future in this game whatsoever.
Right. Let me be clear. When I say that he's a better player than Christina, we're grading on a curve here. I'm not saying that he's objectively a good player by any standards, just that, he's probably more likely to get himself out of this position than Christina would be.
I actually, I disagree with that a bit. I think Michael recognized very early, as soon as Matt was gone, that what he needed to do at that point was kind of stir up shit and then keep his mouth shut. And I think, again, we talked about Michael when we were talking about Christina, and now naturally we're going to be talking about Christina a bit now discussing Michael. He's in a similar position where I think they both need to kind of keep their ears very open and try to pick up on anything that they can use to make some kind of dent or some kind of crack in any existing alliance. I think Michael, for reasons you guys mentioned, the merge is a tipping point in terms of now the physically strong are going to be the big targets rather than the people you want to keep around to keep your tribe strong, or at least maybe not even in your best interest, whatever. It's a tipping point in terms of Michael's physicality is now going to be a negative, an extreme negative for him, especially considering the other men that he's there with now that, Bill and Matt are both gone in terms of, he doesn't have anyone to shield him from the number one physical target, number one physical threat for individual immunities. And much like Christina, again, I think we could see him be a casualty of war in terms of neither major alliance has much use for him. And they could, if they kind of want to kill time before they really set up a power play against the other ones, I think Michael could be an agreeable boot for the other 11 people, the same way Christina could be.
Yeah, I just don't see him having much value to anyone. It'd be different if the alliances were split, say, in three directions, but I know someone sort of outlined in the 2+2 thread, there's almost four groups, and it's very weird how they will come together. And I think ultimately what you're going to see is the six girls are going to stick together, maybe not Tina, but certainly at least five of them, and then you're going to have a couple of the, Troy, Zan, Jay sprinkled in there. And I just don't see anywhere where Michael fits into that scenario. He may think he's fitting into that, but they're going to look at it and say, he's too big of a threat, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, he just has no relationship, and he has no one he can go to say, hey, let's make this move. Don't see the social skills being there. I think he's too much of a smug asshole to do anything in this game, and I just don't see the promise that you see, Kevin.
It's not so much that I see promise. It's that I see what I saw during the Bill episode is, He recognized that he's in a bad position, and he made an active effort to try to stir something up to get to deflect the target away from himself, and then kept his mouth shut and watched it all come crumbling down, which ultimately resulted in that now historic, the men giving up immunity and sending Bill out. I'm not optimistic about Michael's chances, but I do think he's a much more thinking player than I think Kosh, you're giving him credit for. I don't think he's coming across as poorly on the island as he may be. Obviously he has that big problem. He looks more like a smug asshole than he acts like a smug asshole. But that nonetheless, people still see that. And Michael, I don't have high hopes I think he's a very decent player. I certainly don't think he's a bad player. I think he knows what he's doing. It's just he's in a set of circumstances that there's not much he can do about it, and it sucks for him. It really does.
I hope I'm wrong about him, and I definitely see your point. I feel like, what would you say the scenario is? I mean, do you see him aligning with any particular group to get past the point he's at now?
I think it's a situation where there needs to be some conflict in the first one or two votes for Michael to be able to kind of get the target off his back for a while, and then hopefully everything ends up kind of scattered and he can somehow pick up the pieces. I can see him being someone who may try to spearhead a new alliance, although that it's probably not going to work, and it's going to be perceived as scrambling when he does, in fact, try to do that to save himself.
Right. I think if Mike's going to have any chance at all, it's going to be if the men gain control at the merge, or at least the men plus Christina, and that's going to hinge on whether Troy and Jay stick with the guys or go over and join up with Kim and Chelsea and vote with the women. And I don't think that Mike really has a crucial role to play in that. You can argue that maybe he could be an important swing vote at some point, but I'm not sure he's able to leverage that into the kind of good position that he'd need in order to progress much further.
Okay, I think that's fair enough. Michael, I think, I truly do like the guy, but I'm not overly optimistic, and I take it neither of you guys are that much as well. I think we would have seen more from Michael if he had a bigger role to ultimately play in this game, but there's definitely still time. I want to make it very, we're not even halfway through the season, through the episodes yet. Anything can certainly happen, but again, the whole point of the show is trying to unpack the puzzle of what the story we're being told over the course of the season. So I think if we're good to move on from Michael, I think the next one we want to talk about is Leaf. And Leaf, like I mentioned, has been pretty he's had some scenes, but for the most part, we haven't heard a ton from Leaf. And I know part of that is he, like Chelsea, is not a very good speaker. And that may be just why we're not seeing confessionals from him. I know that's happened to several people historically, like Rick, and like, if I can make a very old school reference, I know Zoe from Marquesas was a horrible speaker and just was invisible as a result. So, Koss, what do you think about Leaf now as we enter the merge?
I think Leaf is next out, and I'll say I think that's because he's going to get Kelly Bruno out of this game. I don't think he's a threat at all. I think even if you stick him in the final three, like you said, he's not a good speaker. I guess I can see the fear of taking him to the end, but that's just so it's really just pigeonholes him into, oh, he's a little person, you know, we can't let him get to the end because he'll automatically win. I'd be happy to take him to the end for the most part. It might be a little risky, but I just don't see any talent for the game there. He doesn't seem to have any type of filler instinct in there whatsoever. His strategy basically just seems to be, I'm going to be super nice to everybody and hope that I can get to the end. And when you have something that sets you apart and makes people not want you to take to the end, that's a horrible strategy to have. The same way that it didn't work out for Kelly Bruno and Chad Crittenden. You got to have something that makes people say, oh, well, you know, this guy may be a little person, but, you know, he's a real prick. And so, you know, I think he'd be a great person to sit next to at the end.
So Russell Hampton.
I think Leaf is, yeah, and there's the little person there as well. But I think, you know, Leaf just doesn't have anything going for him, right? He's pissed off the Troy Zan J group a little bit. I think people are just going to look at it and say, we can't let this guy get too far into the game. Let's just go ahead and get him out right now.
Right. But picking out something that you said, I think Leaf might be useful to a thinking player down the road, because now, if they're worried that they might get booted out, let's say, the Final Five, Final Four, for being a jury threat, now, if Leaf is there with them, they can hang that over their heads and think, well, look, if Leaf makes it to the Final Three, he's obviously going to win. We have to get him out now, and now they're one spot closer to the Final Three.
Koss, I want to actually ask you about, to have Leaf as your next boot, I think Leaf's vote is a vote that people are going to be looking for this next vote. I think, as compared to someone like Michael or Christina, where no one really cares and no one thinks they're in an alliance with them or anything to speak of. I think Leaf's vote is going to be kind of a hot commodity in terms as it was this as Manano was thinking about what if they had to go vote someone off after Colton's medevac. I think Leaf's honestly going to be a more integral player, and I think for that reason I have a hard time seeing him be the next boot, because I think one of two things is going to happen. Either both Kim and Jonas's kind of troops are going to say, okay, we're going to take out either Michael or Christina, basically. One of the two that's not really involved in the game at this point. And if it's not, or option number two is they're going to say, we're going head on for each other. And I think Leaf is not going to be the target if that's the case.
The problem with that, though, is that Leaf's vote isn't flexible. People know that he's closely aligned with the men. They know that there's no hope of getting him to flip, so that they have no incentive to offer him anything.
Exactly. He's very similar to, other players like him who have been super boring, super passive players, in that he may seem like he could be a swing vote, but he's just never going to do that. He's going to stick with what he knows, which is the mess. And I think that's ultimately going to be what gets him booted. It's going to be, hey, this guy's a threat down the road, we might as well get rid of him, as opposed to Michael, who might be a bigger physical threat, but he actually could be someone whose vote we could flip. The fact that Leaf has been on the quote-unquote guy's tribe this entire time, I think he's going to ultimately get grouped in with Tarzan and Jonas and Christina, and the other group is going to attack them at the very beginning.
I would agree with that. I don't think he's going to be changing his vote and making moves and switching alliances around, and I think he will be predictably pretty much attached to probably, I think, Jonas specifically, for a long time coming. But again, I don't think anyone's going to perceive him as a threat or in any kind of way, to the point that I really don't see him going anytime soon. I think he may even be the last one remaining out of that whole group. Because he's so,
I could be wrong.
Just because he's so predictable.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that. I just think it's going to end up being very similar to Kelly Bruno in the, we got to get this guy out right now before he gets too far into this game. He's sort of similar to a lot of the weaker players who sneak through, and I say weaker meaning strictly physical strength, sort of like a Yao Man or somebody like that, who, you know, They don't seem overly strong, though they could probably win immunity down the road. But I just think ultimately it's going to be, we can't let this guy get deep into the game. Let's just cut him off right now while we have the chance.
Cut him off at his legs?
Yes, or at the stomach or whatever he has left. But there's not much there.
I bet Jeff is dying for him to win immunity, so Jeff can look tall putting the necklace on someone for the first time.
Right, but then the immunity necklace get dirty. You just get dragged along the ground.
I'm waiting for what's going to be my favorite moment of the season when he has to shove his torch down into that little hole, and the torch is going to be 3 feet taller than him, and they're going to have to do the little upwards crane shot so we can see Leaf as his torch is getting stuffed. I think it's going to be fantastic.
That is going to be that's going to be good times. So I think you know, again, and we're doing this intentionally, going through the players that I think saving the power players for the end. I think those are the most interesting ones. And I think if we're good on Leaf, the next person to talk about is Dom's boy, Tarzan. Dom, what do you have to say on behalf of Tarzan entering this merge beyond the fact that the game is afoot?
Well, I have many things to say about Tarzan, but in terms of him having a chance to win the game, I think there's no shot whatsoever. I would love it if he were able to pull off this sort of massive Long Kong where he gets to the final three and suddenly turns into this new man and it puts on this Articulate Joy performance and everyone loves him and decides to vote for him. I don't see that happening, however. I don't think he's going to get dragged along as a goat just because people know that they can't control him, and if you're someone who's in a good position in the game already, you don't want an element of unpredictability there. You want things to stay as they are. And particularly if you know that you don't need Tarzan the goat because you can beat other people anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we've seen Tarzan, I think it's in the promotion for the next episode, say, you know, I've made up my mind. When I make up my mind, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go with what I say. I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. And Tarzan's proven himself to be someone who is mentally inflexible. And I think if I was out there as someone trying to think of the other players in terms of like kind of like chess pieces, I guess, Tarzan's someone that's you're going to have a hard time moving from what he wants to do, and you kind of just have to hope he ends up wanting to do what you want to do. So, Koss, what do you think about Tarzan now?
I'm with Dom on this. I love Tarzan. I think, you know, he's the Philip Shepherd of this season, but I actually find him much more entertaining than the specialist. You know, Tarzan's absolutely crazy. He has no idea what he's doing out there. I think has the tendencies to be a goat. The problem is that he's just never going to change his mind. He's going to stick with the group that he's with until he's booted, and I think that makes him not a great person to take to the end, sort of like what Dom was saying. But in the meantime, I hope he sticks around for as long as possible because I love having him on my television every week.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Now, and I guess we do want to talk about the previews a bit, because the preview, at least at the, you know, the next time on Survivor, it seems to be Tarzan and Jonas kind of getting into it. And Tarzan basically makes the claim, you know, I'm out of this, I'm a free agent, similar to how we saw Ozzy do that last season, which, as we know, Ozzy was a free agent for about 20 minutes before he said, you know what, I'm back with you guys. Do you think Tarzan truly is going to have a falling out with the men, or do you think that's all kind of a red herring?
I think it's absolutely a red herring, just like every other thing that's in the next episode previews. Tarzan will have his little meltdown 20 minutes into the 3-day period they're about to go into. Him and Jonas will make up, and then, you know, somebody will get booted from their tribe, and Tarzan will have another freak out and do something awesomely funny at Tribal Council.
Yeah, I think that's all about right. I think I would tend to agree with most of what you said. I don't think he can win, unfortunately, because I think it would be fantastic if we saw a Tarzan win, just that kind of character and that kind of guy somehow just winning Survivor. He's fantastic television. I would love to see him play again many seasons. I think he brings a ton to the show. But like I said, I don't think he can win. I don't think he's going to be a very serious contender to win at any point. But I do hope that he sticks around for a while, and I think he will for a while. Similarly to like how Philip Shepherd stuck around, which was Boston Rob wanted to take him, but also he's this big character, and people understood that he was never, ever going to win a final tribal. And I guess it's Tarzan, whoever can get Tarzan truly on their side is going to have a huge leg up. And he's not going to win a jury vote, like I've said six times in this sentence. If you can get Tarzan to do what you want, if you can make your priorities his priorities, that's going to be real good news for you.
Well, I think we got to ask Dom then, can your boy Tarzan pull off some type of win? Is it possible?
As much as I would like that to happen, I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, and I would agree. Now, we have four people left, and I think now we're entering the point where we're looking at very serious winner candidates here. And I think the least serious of the four, but certainly still, in my mind at least, the clear number four pick in terms of power rankings at this point is Jay. And Jay is, again, someone we've seen be quite quiet for the most part. But so I guess let's get right into it with Jay, because I think he's much more complicated than we've been like his game is a bit more in-depth than we've been shown so far. Koff, what do you have to say about Jay at this point?
You know, I like Jay. I did not think I was going to. I thought he'd be just really, you know, dumb. I'm a model. My IQ is 85, and I'm just going to make friends out here. But he does seem much more complex than that, and I really like the angle that he's taken. I mean, he clearly thought he had a majority with the four guys plus Colton at the beginning. It didn't work out, but he immediately got himself back in the good graces of Bet Alliance just by, you know, walking up and saying hello to everybody. I mean, it could not have been any easier for him to make that sort of alliance, if you want to call it that. He's not really in that group anymore, and he seems to be, I think he's ultimately going to stick with Kim and Chelsea and Troyzan, but I think there's a lot of, you know, good gameplay in there. He's not going to be a huge strategist, but he's a super likable guy. I think he's got more intelligence than we would expect, and I definitely think he's got a real good shot to win this thing.
Yeah, like you, I was not anticipating being a big fan of Jay, although I have to say, I've loved seeing, I think he's unintentionally funny, which I love. And it seems like a really decent guy. He seems, you know, he was the one who was the most reserved about going to tribal council in terms of, you know, this is a hastily made decision. This is, we got to think this through a bit, which I wasn't, you know, Jay would have been near the bottom of my list in terms of people who I thought would have thought like that. Jay, again, I think he's in a good position just because he and Troyzan, and as well as Tim and Chelsea from the women's side, have set up, as Don described them last week, they've set up contingency plans in case their respective gender doesn't take the numbers post-merge. Jay and Troyzan now have, like, backdoor outs that, where they can go with Tim and Chelsea. And I think we will, honestly, end up seeing that come into play in terms of we have this Jay and Troyzan, Tim, Chelsea thing that we'll be getting to just very soon. So, Don, what do you think about Jay before we get into all that?
Well, just to reinforce the positive comments that have been made about him so far, one of the things that Colton said was that Jay was actually his closest ally, and that both of them were confused that their tight bond hadn't even been shown on the show at all. And he furthered that by saying that when he was made about, the person he wanted to give his idol to was Jay, but the producers wouldn't let him give it to someone on the other tribe. So I think this shows that, I mean, obviously we've seen Jay forming an alliance with Kim and Chelsea, and it seems to be tied to Troy then, so he does seem to be playing a pretty good game at this point. Whether or not he can win, I'm not quite sure, because if he's ever in the minority, he's gone unless he wins immunity. Just bottom line, I think. I think he's a good player, but not the sort of aggressive player that he would have to be in order to somehow wiggle his way out of that.
Yeah, I think that's about right. You know, Jay, I think Jay is going to be someone I don't see him going around or going home anytime soon, honestly. Because I think even, you know, you mentioned his most likely way he's going to go home is if he's the big physical threat in the minority alliance. But I think it's going to be hard for him to become a member of a minority alliance for a little while, because just no matter who takes the numbers post-merge, I think he's in a decent spot.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think he's one of those that can change his vote based on which direction has power, which side takes over. He can join up with them. So he can either say, oh, Kim and Chelsea got the first vote, yeah, I'll stick with them, or, oh, the guys gained power, yeah, I'm back with them. So I think that does leave him in a really good spot. I think he's ultimately going to go out in, like, the 5th to 7th range. But I think he absolutely has the ability to maneuver once he gets down there. And obviously, along with that, he could win every immunity for the last 3 or 4 challenges. So I think he's got a good shot.
Yeah, but something that's going to be both a blessing and a curse for him is that the fact that he's so likable is going to mean that when it comes down to the end game, he's someone who, if he wins challenges, that is actually going to matter. Because if he sneaks his way into the final three, he has a pretty good shot at winning. So let's say when we get down to, say, roughly final 7-ish, Kim and Chelsea face the decision of, well, do we take Jay and Troyzan further, or do we take Alicia and Kat further, for instance? And I think the choice there is pretty obvious if you're Kim and Chelsea, and I think it's a choice that they're willing to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think when we talk about Jay, naturally we're going to be talking about Troyzan. And if you guys are ready to move on to Troyzan, I think he is coming prior to this last episode, I think he was, along with Kim, probably the number one guy contender, and probably still is the number one guy contender, when you factor in both logistics as well as editing. What do we think Troyzan stands at this point, Cass?
I love Troyzan. I did not think I was going to be a huge fan coming in. I remember listening to your draft, thought, man, that was a reach. Totally agreed with Dom on that one, but looks like we were both wrong. I think Troyzan's playing maybe the best game out of anyone other than Kim. I think he's really positioning himself well. He seems like a super likable guy, which I did not expect either. And I think, you know, I know he's a fan of the game, maybe not a super fan, but he does seem to have some game smarts to him. So I think, you know, Kim and Jonas, obviously, and I know we're going to get to them, but they seem almost too obvious to me at this point. So I really feel like Troy Van might be the guy who, you know, some people feel comes out of nowhere, but I think it's very obvious. They're painting him as the almost like the coach of last season, where you expect him to be a crazy character, but he's actually, you know, playing a fairly sensible game, and I think he's got a really excellent shot to win.
I would absolutely concur with that. And I think additionally, what you want to look at, what's at least something to be thinking about, is what the editors choose to show compared to what they could be showing. And I think with Troyzin, when we talked to Gary Wise after the season premiere, he said, you know, Troyzin's a chauvinist idiot and he could never win because of it. And I think that response, because of some of the comments Troyzin made in the first episode, and I think there are many, many, many more instances that they could have been showing us of Troyzin maybe saying something that may have rubbed someone the wrong way, and we're not seeing that anymore. And I think we easily could be. And I think if they wanted to paint him negatively, or if they weren't, perhaps because he was a winner, somewhat forced to paint him positively, they could very easily be doing that and justifying it. Troyzin, and that obviously concerns me given our bet with Rob Cesternino, but I would say Troyzin, like you said, you know, Jonas and Kim are clearly the figureheads of these other alliances, but a Kim win, despite all this power and despite how good her position wins at looks at this point, it seems very, very obvious, to the point that if she makes the final tribal council, if the same Kim we've been seeing keeps up, there's not going to be any suspense. Whereas with Troyzin, I think he's not so overwhelmingly likable that everyone's going to say, oh, well, he's in the finals, of course he's going to win. But Troyzin's been edited. I think Troyzin's edit is one of the biggest reasons that I have him so high at number one on my contenders list. And I think Troyzin is in an incredible spot. Again, similar to Jay, because no matter who takes the numbers post-merge, he's still going to be in a decent position. He can go with Jonas or he can go with Kim. And for all those reasons, I don't think we're going to see him go anytime soon. And I think he's in a fantastic position to win.
A few things, then. Firstly, I think Troyzin is a chauvinist idiot and just an idiot in general. And I don't mean, you know, he's a smart person in real life but doesn't play the game smartly. And I think you'd apply that description to someone like Edna, maybe, from last season. He just doesn't strike me as a smart person in general. And if he does win, I think it's going to be because he backs into it on the back of his likability rather than because he played any kind of great strategic game. And I don't know. I think you make a point about Kim being obvious, and it's a good point, but it's obvious to us, and I don't think we're the intended audience that the editors are crafting the show for, because we pay attention to things like this. I think the casual viewer doesn't see Kim as the obvious winner at this point. I think most of them, before she found the idol, barely knew who she was. So I think she has time to develop and become, you know, more prominent in the eyes of viewers, whereas I think Troyzin, at this point, yeah, sure, his edit might look good to us, but to them, I'm not sure he's even registering with them.
If I can make a quick point there, you said that Kim doesn't seem like the obvious winner to the casual viewer. Who do you guys think is the, you know, the person who tunes in like every other week or whatever and is a super casual? Who do you think they think will win this game right now?
If I can step in there, I play poker, and there are a lot of people that I play poker with that are actually, I've discovered, big Survivor fans, and we talk about the show a lot. And Kim, I would assert, these guys are casual fans. They watch with their wives or whatever, and they all seem to love Kim. They like Kim, and many of them also like Jonas. They certainly are aware of who Kim and Jonas are, as well as Troyzin. And Colton was obviously a big discussion point amongst us for a long time. I would say Kim, honestly, I would disagree with Dom's assessment that Kim isn't the front runner to the casual viewer, because from what I understand from just the casual viewers I've talked to, she absolutely is. You know, many of my other friends watch the show as well, and they all seem to love Kim.
Let me clarify that. I don't think that being the front runner in the viewer's eyes automatically disqualifies you. I think it's fine to be the front runner as long as there's some element of doubt behind it. I think during Plough, for instance, Tom Westman was clearly the front runner at any given point, because, you know, you'd expect, he's the sort of guy that you expect to win, but it was always made to look as if there were obstacles in his way. And I think we're going to see the same thing with Kim. I mean, we're only halfway through the season at this point. There's plenty of time for there to be doubts surrounding Kim. For instance, you know, there's probably going to be some contrived storyline about, will Chelsea betray the knowledge about the idol or whatever, or, you know, has Kim angered too many people in the jury, or has she betrayed too many people or whatever. these are all things which can be developed during the rest of the season. So I think it, just as it might be premature to anoint him as winner, it's also premature to ride her off. And I don't think, if you are going to ride her off, Troy Zan's a natural person to step into the breach.
Go ahead.
No, I think that's a great point, and I think, like we were kind of talking about, it's almost like Kim and Jonas are the very obvious ones to us, and that may mean they're actually the ones, but like you said, I think ultimately, if it's not those two, I think not only is Troy a heavy favorite, Jay is the only other one I really could see having a good shot to overtake him. I think if it's not Kim or Jonas, there's almost no doubt it's going to be Troy Zan.
I would absolutely agree with that. I'm glad we're now towards the end of our list of contenders. I don't honestly even think Jay, I think logistically has a good way of winning. I think we'd be seeing a much different side of Jay if were he to have gone on and won. I think Troy Zan, Kim, and Jonas, your winner is going to be one of those three people. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's move on now to Jonas, I think, first. So Jonas is now obviously the de facto leader of Monano at this point. He seems to be aware of it. You know, after he saw that Colton was out, he said, now I get to be the one running the show now. And it seems that we're being set up for Jonas is kind of running the show at Monano, Kim's running the show at Solani, and now we're at Emerge, and we're going to see how that plays out. So I guess, Todd, first question, how do you think that's going to play out with regard to Jonas?
I think it will ultimately play out very differently than I thought pregame. Pregame, I thought it was going to be the misfit guys and the young, hip girls, but I thought the guys, even though I picked Kim as my winner, I thought the guys were a heavy favorite. Now I think it's the exact opposite. I think the guys are a mess. Jonas is there and leading them, but he's leading them as of like 6 hours ago. So I don't see a ton of story with them, and I don't see a ton of strategy. I mean, when you look at who Jonas's main allies are, they're not the smartest people in the game or even close to it. And I think, they're potentially ones that are going to be cut off here pretty quickly. So I like Jonas a lot, but I question whether he's in a good position. And ultimately, I think the women plus Jay and Troy Zan are going to be the ones that sort of grab this game by the balls. And I think that'll ultimately be Jonas's undoing.
Yeah, and I would agree. I certainly think we're going to see the new Solani tribe be the ones end up taking control. But I think if they don't, Jonas is certainly in the position to win should Monano somehow take control. And I think that's why he's just logistically in a very good position. And then also when you factor in his edit, he's been very visible for a guy who I think, generally speaking, and this is no offense intended or whatever, I think he's a generally pretty unremarkable guy, but we've seen a lot of him. And we've seen a lot of him, for instance, with Colton's medevac, it was Jeff talking to Jonas about when Colton was there lying on the ground and I was there smiling as wide as my face could get. Jeff was talking to Jonas about the implications of Colton leaving and what was going to happen now and how he felt about it. And the editors chose to show Jeff talking to Jonas. I'm sure he wasn't the only one he talked to, but we're clearly being led to, at least it seems clear to me, Jonas is someone we're supposed to know and someone who his views on the game we're supposed to be aware of. And I think that's a very common thing that we've seen amongst winners, most notably Sophie Clark, most recently Sophie Clark, where last season she wasn't coach, she wasn't Brandon Hitch, she wasn't overly visible like we've seen Tarzan, like we've seen Colton, like we've seen with Kim in terms of he's not a lock to win if he makes it. He's certainly not a lock to take control. But were he to go on and win, we would understand why. And I think it would all make sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, if the guys are the ones that gain control, I don't think there's any question Jonas is the guy to focus on. In fact, as much as I know we kind of been holding off on Jonas and Kim, but I'll go ahead and throw this Kim tidbit out there. I think if the guys are the ones that gain control, Kim could be out of this thing either this week or next week, and I don't think she would make it any longer than that. So I think we're going to know pretty quickly whether Jonas has, is the heavy favorite to win this game, because if the guys gain control, I think Chelsea and Kim are going to be out of there quickly, and Jonas is just going to run this thing.
Well, the question then to me becomes, we've all seemed to be in agreement that Solani will be the tribe that takes over post-merge in terms of Kim and Troy Zan and Chelsea and Jay probably running the show. But Jonas's edit is what's been kind of peculiar, because he is certainly going to be viewed as the leader of that of the opposition. But his edit doesn't make a ton of sense in terms of someone who goes out early jury. And it certainly would make sense for someone who wins, which is what And again, perhaps it's just a great red herring. And of course, every season needs that kind of distraction from the eventual winners. But it just kind of confuses me. And I think Jonas, he doesn't seem like he's going to be going out anytime soon, even though I would concur that it would probably be in the Solani Alliance's best interest to get the person who everyone on Monano trusts and wants to work with out of there.
To move back to the strategy for a minute, let's say Jonas does take control post-merge, so presumably because Troy and Jay flip back over, and then those two, Jonas, Leaf, Tarzan, and Christina, gain the majority. What do you think Jonas's path should be from there? Like, how does he get to the final three? A good final three for him?
I don't think there's... I honestly, given those sets of people outside of probably Troyzan, because we've seen Troyzan get along well with the women, I don't think there's a bad final three for Jonas, again, removing Troyzan from those from that list of players.
Yeah, it seems like there are a lot of potential goats among the men, so whoever's best place to knock off the other potential threats is able to will be in a fantastic position going into the end game.
Yeah, I think if Jonas gains control, honestly, I think Chelsea's the first boot, Kim is the second, and then from there, it's easy for Jonas. I think he can bring. I'm looking at my notes here so I can remember everybody, but so we've got, you know, he can bring Tarzan and Leaf with him, and those are his three. All he needs is one other person to really keep the majority once he gets in the final seven. And I think it's pretty easy, say you bring like a Cat or an Alicia or a Christina along, do they really want to stick with the other side, which is, you know, Jay and Troyzan and Michael? It's a pretty easy argument for Jonas to say, hey, it's me, Leaf, and Tarzan. Why don't you come with us, Christina, in the final seven? We'll be the final four, and then, you know, we'll boot whoever. It doesn't really matter. It's easy. Easy track for Jonas. I think if he can get Kim and Chelsea out, this thing is over at final 10. He's already won at that point.
Wow, sorry, go ahead, Dom.
Well, him or Troyzan, I think, as bullish as I am about Troyzan, sometimes I think he could fill that role as well. But I think you bring up a good point, which is that there are even more goats in this scenario than there might be otherwise, because if the men do take control and start begonging the women, Alicia and Kat are probably going to be the last two women in the game. And I don't think even if those who somehow make it to the end that they're going to get votes from the other women or any of the men. So there's a lot of room for someone like Jonas to play as aggressive a game as he likes, because he knows that he's going to have a good stock of goats to take with him.
I also think it helps that Tarzan and Leaf both seem to be very, you know, Tarzan obviously not in the preview for next episode as we discussed, but they both seem to be very willing to listen to Jonas and work with him for the most part. Leaf for sure will do basically whatever Jonas tells him, I would imagine at this point.
Right.
And point being there that he's going to smash both of them in a jury vote. And again, I think he smashes pretty much everyone in a jury vote with the exceptions of Kim and Troyzan. And like Koss said, if he can find a way to get Kim and Chelsea out of this game in the next two or three weeks, yeah, it's looking like a done deal for him to coast pretty effortlessly to a win, depending on Troyzan's position. But I think if that's the situation, he's not going to have too difficult of a time getting Troyzan out if Kim and Chelsea are also both out.
And Jonas is the best kind of leader to have in this game, and I mean that from Jonas's point of view, because he is not physically threatening. He also doesn't seem like a guy who's going to be a jury threat, but I think he, just from what we've seen in the confessionals, he's a very underrated sort of storyteller, captivating type of speaker. Even though he's sort of a boring guy, I think he's absolutely capable of sitting at a final tribal council saying, you know, I ran this thing and, you know, it was a piece of cake. I don't think he'd have any problem winning over a jury, and he's just not going to be someone looked at by a Leaf or a Michael as, hey, we got to get this Jonas guy out because he's really threatening. It's going to be, we got to get Troyzan out or we got to get Jay out. Jonas is going to be a leader who is not an obvious boot, and I think that's what makes his ride so easy.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. As I was watching, I rewatched the last episode before we do these podcasts, Jonas's way of speaking is very subdued, and it's not overly convincing, but it doesn't have to be, and it's certainly very unthreatening. He doesn't come across as aggressive whatsoever.
Well,
go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, I take issue with that, because if we think back to a few episodes ago with the net scene, we saw Kim in a confessional and Sabrina in a secret scene saying that Jonas came across as very rough, whereas Troyzan, they said, you know, by contrast, they all liked him. He had this much more pleasant manner. So I think Jonas can be a bit too abrasive sometimes. That might come back to bite him later on. Just to ask you, Cosgrove, so if the men do take control, like you said, we're assuming that Chelsea and Kim and presumably Sabrina go first, barring any use of Kim's idol or whatever. At what point do you think Jonas should try to get Jay or Troyson out of the game, assuming we agree that he needs to do that?
Final seven. I think it's always final seven in these types of scenarios, and it's especially perfect because there would be six guys plus presumably Christina. So I think with those seven, it's a pretty easy argument for him to make to Christina to say, look, it's me, you, Leaf, Tarzan. We'll get Leaf out at the final four because, you know, the whole little person thing. So then it's me, Christina, and Tarzan at the end. And in Christina's mind, she obviously knows Tarzan can't win. So it's really just her against Jonas. That's a pretty good argument for her to go with them as opposed to the other side. So I think Final Seven is definitely the time he attacks Trozan and Jay.
Yeah, I like that analysis. And also, I think Leaf might be the best Final Four boot of all time because he's someone whose status of jury threat is going to be overrated by the other players in the game. He's not going to win immunity, so you can kick him out. And even if he does get to the end, the fact that he isn't going to win immunity makes it less likely that he is going to get to the end and disrupt your plans. So he's the kind of person who you definitely want to string along for as long as possible before cutting him loose. And I think that's a pretty nice boot order. So let's say Jay at final seven, Troyce at six, presumably Mike at five, although you can mix it up at that point, and then Leaf at four, and then Jonas is sitting pretty, it looks like.
Oh, well, I think the concern there, in the same sense that Leaf is the obvious Final Four boot, and also I would add to Leaf's obvious Final Four boot candidacy, that even if he does get to the finals, he's still not going to beat you. But at least in terms of everyone else's perception, we got to get rid of the little person, otherwise everyone's just going to auto-vote for them to get the $1 million.
well, hold on, I think people do like Leaf. I mean, when we talked to Jim and Albert, both of them said that people like Rick would have won last season, which, yeah, I think Leaf is playing the same role as Rick at this point, the guy who's just kind of there, no one really cares or notices about him, but who is a jury threat beyond the extent to which we might want him to be or think that he might be.
Well, I think Albert said kind of the opposite, which is that people retrospectively assigned them that role as jury threats, specifically I think with both Rick and Brandon when we talked to Albert, saying they were not legitimate jury threats at the time, that people, because of the circumstances in which they went out, they would have won the jury had they stepped in, everyone knowing at that time that they had gotten screwed over. I don't agree that Rick and specifically Rick and Brandon were big jury threats, but that's a bit besides the point.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Jonas also is going to have, because, you know, I don't think abrasive when you is the right word to describe how he speaks. Although, and they may have used, the women themselves may have used that word, but I think it's more, he certainly doesn't ever come across like he's lying, typically because he's not lying. But I also think that people are going to appreciate that if it is a final tribal council situation, he comes across as honest and very open with what he's doing, as opposed to someone, an extreme example would be like Sash, for instance, where no matter what he says, you just can't believe it, because just looking at him for whatever reason.
That's fair. Cos, what's your take on this?
You know, I think Leaf is an underrated and very, he doesn't have a high probability to win a jury vote, but if there's one thing that's underrated about him, it is that he's a super nice guy. If he wins, as like the guy who gets taken there and just happens to fall into the win, it's not going to be because he's a midget. It's going to be because he's a nice guy and he's nicer than who he's sitting next to. But ultimately, I think if he gets there, you know, you're looking at about a 5% chance of him winning. I just don't see him getting there. I don't see people letting him get there. It's not, 15 seasons ago on Survivor where people really didn't care about taking a Christie to the end. It's, you have some type of physical affliction, and because of that, your life is super hard, so there's no way we can let you get to the end. So I think even though he could win a jury threat, it certainly isn't because he's a midget.
Yeah, fair enough. And again, I don't think any of us have Leaf on our serious contenders list. But I do think he could be someone that we see, and I think Tarzan is probably the more likely candidate, but someone, if Jonas does go on to win, Leaf could be an integral part in that. I think if you guys are ready, I think it's time we move on to Kim now. And Kim, I think it would be the front runner at this point, at least in most people's eyes, in terms of when you combine both edit and also logistics. She's in just this crushing position. And before we get, you know, we're going to talk about the just general concepts that we see post-merge in terms of, we're going to talk about the natural result of like a women's Final Five, as Dom mentioned earlier. We're going to talk about what we predict is going to, what we actually predict is going to happen. But I think first we do need to talk about Kim individually. Cost, you know, I'm sure you're fully aware of Kim's position in the game right now. How do you think, I guess with Kim, when she's in such a position, the real question is, what's her best line of action to pursue to best improve her position to win?
Number one, it's, you know, she's got to get Janine Troyes in on her side so they have seven people at this vote, which I think she's going to do. You know, they got to get Jonas out of there quickly. And then from there, it's pretty easy. Again, her path is similar to Jonas in that she's not a super obvious, we got to get this girl out immediately type of booth. So I think even though she's the leader, she'll be protected, especially since she's sitting with Chelsea. So I think, you know, if she can get the guys out pretty early, then it's, you know, the final seven or nine or whatever includes Jay and Troyes in. The girls vote them out because they're very easy boots. And from there, all she really has to do, which is ultimately what I think she's going to do, is bring Alicia and Kat with her and then have, you know, a Kim, Chelsea, Kat final three, which I think Kim wins very easily. It's almost, again, I know I mentioned this, it almost seems too easy. She, since day one, even before the season started, has seemed like maybe to me the most obvious pregame favorite ever. And I don't think any of that has changed. And every time I watch an episode, I go, it's so obvious that Kim's going to win this game that I almost can't believe it can't be this obvious. So I think she's a monster favorite right now. I think if you had to, you know, put it at like even money, I might even take the bet. She just seems to be in such a great spot. The only way she doesn't win is if they end up losing control very early on.
I agree with a lot of that. I mean, before the season started, I was reading on a lot of, you know, Survivor fan groups and stuff and forums, and I've never seen pre-season a candidate with as much support in terms of winner picks as Kim has got ever. And that includes all the people who, you know, came up just short, or people who, you know, maybe came across better in their bios than they did in the game. But Kim she was a consensus pick. Everyone had her as their winner pick. But I think sometimes the obvious conclusion is what happens. I mean, if you think back to Redemption Island, throughout the whole season, people were saying, well, surely Rob can't win. It'd just be too obvious. But, you know, all the obstacles to his win, as puny as they were, eventually crumbled and he took it home. I think the same thing could happen with Kim. Like, I don't think her strength is a reason to write her off yet.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the same concern that I have, which is, and I think I mentioned it earlier on the podcast, which is that if we see Kim make the finals, it's going to be such a no-brainer that she's going to win. It's exactly like Boston Rob in Redemption Island, where basically every episode was just Rob explaining what he's doing and how he's playing Survivor perfectly, and was in fact doing that, to be sure. And Kim, we've seen pretty much the same thing, which is, I'm Kim. I'm steamrolling this field. She's not as direct about it, but this is how I'm doing it. We've had every reason. The viewers have had every reason to like her and be rooting for her. And like Dom mentioned, the support that she got preseason was overwhelming. I honestly can't remember anything like it. You know, we had Empire Man come on to do the preseason thing. The preseason power rankings, all three of us had her as the number one. She was the inspiration, although not the first winner for the Gen Lion Memorial. And Kim, again, the question, honestly, at this point to me is, much like Cox, it seems just so obvious that it's going to be Kim, that how can it possibly be Kim?
Yeah, Cos, I'm curious, what do you think, do you like Kim as a player, or do you think she's just the best of a bad bunch? She's the kind of winner by default, if you like.
Oh, no, I love her. I think she's really good. I think I may have even underrated how she was before the season started, and I think if she continues on this path, there's no question in my mind she's a top, you know, 15, 20 player of all time. I really like her, you know, sort of demeanor in that she's sort of in the background, but she's always leading, and people seem drawn to her. And I think that's, you know, something that 99% of the people cast on the show cannot do. They cannot have people drawn to them but still be sort of out of focus for most people. Because I think if you're looking from the inside of the game type of point of view, Kim isn't as big of a threat as we're seeing her on TV. I think, you know, there are many other people who look much more threatening than her. So I think she's doing a great job sort of gaining control without actually looking like she's in control. For example, putting Sabrina in charge of, you know, being the leader on the tribe. That's, you know, a great example of that very few players do. So I love her. I think she's playing a fantastic game.
Yeah, I'm getting strong Danny Boatwright vibes of her in that she's the quiet leader of a tribe without being perceived as such by the people in the game. And I think you highlighted it perfectly. I think everyone, at least in the on the men's tribe, sees Sabrina as the figurehead of that group. And I think Chelsea as well is going to be a target earlier than Kim is. So Kim could potentially be in this for long haul, even if her alliance is thrust into the minority. And yeah, I think if she does win, she could easily be one of the top 10, 15 players of all time. I think there's a long way to go yet, but she's definitely on my list of top 15 female players of all time already.
She's on the list of the top 5 female players of all time already, no matter what her result is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably being too cautious here, but yeah, I'm a big fan. I think she's very good at this.
You know, I mentioned last podcast that I thought something that stood out to me about Kim was when she found the idol. It was right even directly before or after having found the idol. She made a point in a confessional to say, I am aware that this game is not easy and that it's going to be tough at certain times. This doesn't happen to be one of those times, but I am aware of and ready for those times. And I think Danny Boatwright is the best comparison possible. And that was actually the comparison I made before the season even began. And I remember when I made that comparison, I said, well, you know, those are some big shoes to fill, as Danny, of course, went on to win. But I think that's pretty much exactly what we're seeing out of Kim. I love Kim's chances. I think, you know, I mentioned, I think Troizen honestly is my number one, and it's not so much, it's honestly me probably just out-leveling myself because a Kim win seems so obvious. This is what I will tell you. You know, we saw that challenge where they bounced the coconuts off the trampoline. Both Kim and Troizen had massive, like, slammed it down and nailed it. Troizen obviously, of course, being for the win in that challenge. If one of those two goes on to win, which I think one of those two goes on to win probably 80-90% of the time at this point, we will see that clip in the winner's montage. And I think with Kim specifically, there's so much stuff that we can see conceivably being in the winner's montage.
Yeah
absolutely. I think she's, there's so much to like about her that, again, I think the only thing that keeps me thinking it might not be her is that it's too obvious. And, you know, I think to kind of get in a little bit to the sort of the end game and what I'm looking at with her, I think, you know, like I said, if the guys gain control, I think Jonas runs this very easily. If Kim gains control, I think the only hiccup that there's going to be is when they hit Final Nine, and it's going to be, you know, Kim, Chelsea, Kat, and Alicia together. Then you're going to have, you know, Jay, Troizen, and two others. And Sabrina's kind of going to be the swing vote in that. And I think what you're ultimately going to see is that Sabrina will stick with her girls, and that'll be why Sabrina comes in fourth place or whatever. But I think the way that Troizen wins this game is if he can get Sabrina on his side. So I think, you know, Jonas is the obvious winner if the guys gain control. If Kim gains control, if she gets past Troizen at Final Nine, she is golden, and it'll be even easier for her than it would be for Jonas on the other side.
Yeah, just to sing Kim's phrases a bit more, we know from Colton himself that he was that she was his closest ally. We know that she's Chelsea's closest ally. We saw Sabrina begging God practically for Kim to be on a tribe when the tribes are mixed up. We saw the same thing with Kat as well. It seems that Kim has this way about her where it's very easy for her to form bonds with people and get them to trust her. And it seems like going into the merge, she's in the center of the women's line. She's best positioned there. She has this side deal with Troizen and Jay, which I think she's probably going to stick to. They're probably going to stick to. I'm curious what you think, though, about the way in which she and the rest of Solani treated Mike, because it seems like you have this guy who clearly has no alliances with anybody and who's on your tribe for the next, you know, 6 or 9 days. Wouldn't you try and get something together with him somehow as well?
I suspect, because I thought the same thing, I suspect she sat and talked to Troizen about what was happening, or presumably Troizen, about the dynamics back at men's camp, and I think she recognized that Troizen was going to be a better option for her post-merge in terms of she wants to have that contingency plan if the men end up taking the numbers, and Michael doesn't have any say really within the men's tribe, and Troizen does, I think. And for that, there's certainly merit to her picking up Michael, because he would probably be the easiest one, the highest percentage of the time in terms of getting him to truly get on her side. But I think Troizen is probably the higher value person to have on your side.
Okay, so moving on, Ty, let's assume for a moment that she does manage to take control of the merge. Who do you think her first target should be, and why? Yes.
I think it's got to be Jonas. I mean, it won't be, but I think that's the easy boot, and that's in her shoes. I don't think there's any question Jonas would be my number one target.
Okay, Colin, what do you think?
Jonas, of course, I think is the gut response, just because he is the guy that everyone who is not closely aligned with Kim wants to be closely aligned with and does tend to trust. And if you can remove that person from the game, the person who can rally the charge against you, that's certainly something you want to be doing. But like Kostad, I don't think that's what she is going to end up doing. And I'm honestly not sure what she is going to end up doing, but I think it may honestly be someone like Michael or maybe even someone like Christina, where she knows she probably can't get Christina to come back with the women. And I think that we may end up seeing Jay and Troyzan stay with Solani, as we all seem to think is going to happen, because Jonas is willing, for whatever reason, to go with a Christina boot, thinking he has, then the guys are going to have the numbers. And I think it's very easy. A Christina boot, I think, puts Troyzan in a very good position. It puts Kim in a very good position, and I think Jonas will think it puts him in a decent position, to the point that I don't think she will be targeting Jonas, despite that's probably her best bet at this point.
Yeah, I think Christina's actually the correct boot here for a number of reasons. Firstly, because you, even if you don't know for a fact, you can surmise with, you know, pretty good level of certainty that Christina is loyal to the men now and not to any of the women. So it's not like you're losing a woman, but you can make it look to Jay and Troyzan like you're making a sacrifice by discarding Christina, as a symbol of trust to them. Also, Kim's position, if she is in the majority, is a good one. And Christina isn't a power play, so removing Christina doesn't change the game at all. And if the game is going the way you want to, which it would be for Kim, that's a good thing to do. And you can get rid of Jonas whenever you want. So getting rid of him isn't an immediate priority. It's not like he's Boss and Rob in terms of either challenges, where he's going to go on some immunity run, or in terms of strategy, where he's going to be able to swing people over from your side. Also, I think she can use a Christina boot to reinforce a sense of loyalty among the women. So she can say to them, look, Christina betrayed us, she's a gender traitor, whatever. And that will keep them in tight and stop any of them from defecting, so that when they do get down to, final nine, final seven, when Kim should be in danger, she's less likely to be.
The one concern I have about that, I think, on Kim's behalf, I guess, is that when you go to the other women and say, listen, we're going to boot Christina, it kind of, I think, signals to them that I have at least backup. I'm not worried about the men taking the numbers.
No, but I'm assuming, and I think it's a fair assumption, that the women all know that Christina is not on their side anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. That's true.
Yeah, and I guess I should clarify my end that, even though I think Jonas should be her number one target, I don't think he will be. I think you're probably looking at the first three post-merge boots, in my opinion, being like Leaf, Michael, and Christina. And that's mostly because I think Jonas has been edited to not go out this early. But I think you're ultimately looking at that final nine scenario where it's, Jonas trying to get back in good graces with Troyzan and Jay and Tarzan to flip this thing. And then Sabrina becomes the swing vote who sticks with the girls, and that becomes her storyline of why she didn't win this game and why she went out in fourth place. So I don't think Jonas will go out 12th, but I think that should be her number one target.
Okay.
Yeah. If I can throw in one more thing about Kim, just about her role as the leader. You mentioned that she certainly is the leader of the women's tribe, and she's being given a lot of credit for leading behind the scenes. I honestly don't think she's that under the radar as the leader, generally speaking, but certainly I don't think she's out there dealing with players who are going to recognize that kind of thing, which is which is obviously all that really matters to her.
Right. So thinking forward a bit, so Kim and the women take control. They get rid of whoever they want. A few more tribal councils happen. Now we're down to the beginning of the endgame, so final nine, final seven-ish. What do you think Kim's plan to be at this point? Because it seems like she can drag, one plan might be she can drag Troyzan and Jay along to the final seven, at which point her and Chelsea, specifically her, have all of the control, because now she and Chelsea are the swing votes. No one else is aware that they're the swing votes, and they can pretty much dictate how the boot order is going to go from there.
I think her plan is ultimately just to take the lesser girls with her, and by that I mean Kat and Alicia. I think those would be the ones that she sticks with simply because they're she knows what they're going to do. And I think, you know, Alicia maybe becomes riskier down the road and you maybe got to cut her off and keep somebody else in her place. But I think the ultimate plan for her as she's looking down the road into the final five, say, is to be there with Chelsea and Kat and say, it's us three to the end. And so when they get in the final five, they're always going to have the majority there and they're just going to be able to run those three to the finals.
Okay. So given that, you think, when should she get rid of Troyzan and Jay?
Oh, I think the ideal time to get rid of them is either final nine or final seven. I'd certainly prefer to do it earlier, but I think it'll ultimately depend on how Alicia is fitting in with those guys and how much of a stir she's going to create. But I think it's pretty easy for Kim to have a majority of final seven as far as having her, Chelsea, Kat, and Sabrina. The issue will be, can she maintain that at final nine? And I think she ultimately will, because she'll have the five girls being Kim, Chelsea, Kat, Sabrina, and Alicia. So I think the best time to get rid of Jay is probably final nine. I think the best time to get rid of Troyzan is probably final eight or final seven. And then from there, it's just smooth sailing.
Yeah, my concern now, I think, with this season is that at this point, it seems clear, we have these three major winner candidates being Troyzan, Jonas, and Kim. But it seems difficult to me to think of a situation where even entering the final five that more than one of them is going to still be there, which in terms of maintaining drama, probably not great for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think once you get into the final five, it's going to be very obvious who the winner is. It'll be whichever one of those three remaining candidates is still there. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if only one of them is left at final seven. So, you know, the last four or five episodes of this season might be pretty slow.
Yeah, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully we see some kind of crazy endgame. And you know, I think it's time we can move on now, I think, to talk about some potential different endgame situations. And I think one thing we haven't really addressed yet that I know we've been hinting at getting to is if we do, in fact, see the women end up all sticking together in that initial five-person alliance, running the table and going deep. And Dom, I know this is something you've been wanting to talk about, so do you want to get into a women's final five?
Yeah, sure. So, Cos, let me outline what we sort of determined about this, and we'll see what you think. So if we get down to the five women, so Alicia, Kat, Kim, Chelsea, and Sabrina, it seems like Alicia and Kat are the goats, and everyone knows it. So anyone who's sitting as a third person in that final three is going to win for sure. So everyone's goal is to be that third person, and it seems like if everyone's thinking rationally, you want to be the third most popular person of that five. So let's say the hierarchy in descending order goes like Kim, Sabrina, Chelsea, and then Alicia and Kat. At final five, you can say, well, we need to get rid of Kim, she's too popular. Then at final four, you say, well, we get rid of Sabrina, she's too popular. Now your final three is Chelsea, Alicia, and Kat, and Chelsea wins pretty effortlessly. And you can substitute Chelsea with another of the women, depending on how that's structured. So, you know, do you think that's a realistic scenario? And if so, how do you think that hierarchy runs?
I actually don't think that's an overly realistic scenario. I think you're going to be very hard-pressed to get two goats in this final. I think it's either going to be Kat or Alicia, and I think one of them is almost definitely going to be there if the women gain control, but I don't see any scenario where they're both there. I think that's just too difficult to pull off, especially with Alicia being, you know, crazy. You just can't control her. I think more than likely you're going to see Kat in the third spot and Alicia out either fourth, fifth, sixth, somewhere in that range, just because she's too hard to control.
Do you think then that after this episode, if the women do take control, then Kat might be in the Natalie Tenorelli spot where you know that she's pretty much a lot for final three no matter what happens?
Absolutely. In fact, I think Kat is maybe the biggest lock in the game. If you were going to say who's the person most likely to be in the finals, I think it's already Kat, and I think if the women gain control like we expect them to, there'll be almost no question that Kat's in the final three.
Okay.
I would agree, and I think that's very, very good news for me as a viewer.
Of course it is. Moving on to better things. So, hypothetically then, let's say this scenario did come about. So we get down to five women, and this kind of leveling war takes place. If you're someone like Kim or Sabrina, and you know that you're going to be the victim of this process, what steps do you take beforehand to counteract that?
I think it's pretty easy, and that's what I was kind of mentioning about Sabrina being the swing vote at final nine, potentially. I think she Chicken probably gets through just booting the guys in the final nine. But when Sabrina gets the final seven, that's when she has to boot Kim. There's no question about it. She has to boot at least one of Kim or Chelsea at final seven and then the other one at final six, or she's going to be drawn stone dead. Because I think what you're ultimately going to see happen is she's going to be too passive to make that move until it's too late. And then once she gets in the final five, Kat's sitting there and says, well, hey, I've been, you know, with Kim and Chelsea the whole time. I'm going to stick with them. And Sabrina's just going to wait too long to make that move. So I think the best way for her to defend against that is to make the move at final seven.
And if you're Sabrina in that spot, does the suspicion that Kim has the idol change at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just means you got to vote for Chelsea first. But, I mean, I guess you could assume that Kim has the idol, but at the end of the day, I don't think it makes a huge difference because you're either booting Kim and Chelsea or Chelsea and Kim. So, you know, pick whichever order you want based on the leveling war of who has the idol and will Kim give it to Chelsea. But I think you got to focus on getting them out of final seven as opposed to final nine when it's maybe a little too early to focus on them. Because if you do it in final nine, then the guys may be able to regain control, and that's a way worse situation for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look ahead to this next episode. We now have 12 people left, and obviously now we are merged. And the way the way the tribes have broken down is actually a bit ambiguous at this point. We could end up seeing it's somewhat unlikely that Christina wants to go back with the women. We could see men versus women 6-on-6. We could see all six men and Christina go on to take the advantage, or we could see the women with Troizin and Jay minus Christina take the 7-5 advantage. So, Koth, I think the big question that everyone's been staying tuned to listen for is how are we going to see this play out in your mind?
So I think it's the five girls, which is every girl minus Christina, plus Jay and Troizan. I think those are the seven. My prediction now is still that Leif, Michael, and Christina are the first three boots. You get into that final nine where it's on one side Kim, Chelsea, Kat, and Alicia. The other side is Troizan, Jay, Tarzan, and Jonas. Sabrina's the swing vote. She sticks with the girls. They run it down to where the final four are Kim, Chelsea, Kat, Sabrina. Sabrina goes out fourth. Kim wins, you know, 7-2 with Kat getting no votes.
You don't think Kat would get Alicia's vote?
I don't think so. I think Alicia votes for Chelsea, and I think Chelsea maybe gets one or two other votes, but I think Kim just wins very easily, and ultimately I think it will be Kim sticking with Chelsea because she knows she can beat her.
Very interesting. I think that's a very logical and a very sound approach to take, which is why we're very happy to have you on the show.
Do you think there's any scenario in which it makes sense for Kim to go with Troizan and Jay instead? Like, assuming there is
no,
a choice to be made.
Absolutely not. I think that is never going to be a good option for her. I don't see any scenario where you go, hey, I'm going to take these two guys who could potentially beat me or vote me out, as opposed to sticking with sort of the constants, which are Chelsea and Kat and Sabrina.
Yeah, I guess the argument for keeping them in the game for some time at least would be that you have a notional alliance with them, so they're likely to stick with you, or at least not try to get you voted out. But that's probably the same as probably true of people like Tarzan and Leif, whoever, anyway, and you know, they're much less dangerous in terms of strategy and the immunity challenges.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I'm probably different than most people, but I don't even factor in the immunity threat or anything like that. I don't see any reason why Kim should want to sit next to or have an alliance with Troizan and Jay for very long. I think they're necessary now, so they have the majority, but as soon as they're not necessary, you got to get those guys out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. So I think, I still honestly really like Troizan's chances, but I think at this point, I think at this point, Kim is probably your likely winner in terms of when you, like I said, when you combine all these things together. And I think Troizan and Jonas, again, I honestly think are the only two other real winner candidates. And I think they're there to provide the doubt in terms of Kim's otherwise obvious win, which makes it somewhat, logistically, it's hard for them to also be there much past Final Seven is the thing. Sorry, I don't even know what point I'm trying to make here. Dominic, what more are we trying to cover before we end this? I want to. I guess.
Is this a rhetorical question or what? I mean.
No, I'm asking. I'm genuinely curious. What more are we? Dikash, do you have other stuff you want to talk about in terms of other hypotheticals and people taking power?
I'm interested to see. I mean, I think we're all in sort of agreement that Kim is the heavy favorite to win. What scenario do you guys see? I mean, do you have a final three in mind, or is there maybe some other path you think that she should take as a potential winner?
Okay. If I was Kim, I think we go for Christina first, then Mike, then Jonas, then probably Tarzan and Leaf in some order. So then final seven is Girls, Mike, Christina, plus Troyzan and Jay. Then I take out Jay at seven, Troyzan at six. Then maybe Alicia beforehand, but then, yeah, Sabrina goes at four, and then final three would be myself being Kim, and then some combination of Chelsea, Alicia, and Kat.
So do you think there's any merit, I guess, is a natural question, in Kim going to the final five with both Troyzan Jay as well as Sabrina and Chelsea? And then they both are arguing. You want to be the swing vote in at odd numbers in Survivor, generally speaking. Do you see there being any merit in that, as opposed to, like, is there any way she doesn't go with Kat and Alicia, I guess?
The thing is, if she does that, she has to screw over some of the women to get there, which means that she could conceivably lose at that point to someone like Jay or Troyzan, which means that she is risking one of them, whoever's left, winning immunity at the final four and ruining her plans. But there could be an argument to it, I guess, if certain contingencies are held.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would have to be some kind of insane deal to get Kat and Alicia, for me to be taking out Kat and Alicia, who I know are never going to win a final tribal counseling against me, and keeping in people like Troyzan and Jay, who are at least drawing live both to win out immunities, probably drawing live to be willing to turn on me to potentially be to the jury.
Yeah, that would strike me as something very similar to the situation we found Coach in last season, where at seven, if he chooses to keep Cochran and Edna, he probably wins the game very easily. Whereas, in fact, he boots out his two most obvious goats and then is in a very difficult position.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent comparison, actually.
And I just think that Kim has set herself up. I mean, she obviously has multiple alliances she would go with, but her strongest one is the one that she's had from day one, and it's absolutely perfectly designed in that her best friend is somebody she knows she can beat and won't turn on her, so that's one good person to have in your corner. She also has Kat, who's not going to turn on her and isn't smart enough to do so, and she can't win a final vote. That's two excellent allies to have. And then you have Sabrina, who's sort of the figurehead, who becomes an easy boot inside the final five because, as Kim, you can say, hey, Sabrina's the leader. We got to get her out, when, in reality, Kim knows she's the leader. So it seems too easy for her with that particular group. And like Dom said, the best part about that is she doesn't look like a bad guy to anybody. She stuck with her alliance until the end, and then she made the moves that anyone in their right mind would make. So I think the other path with Jay and Troyzan, just it steps on too many people's toes, and it just leaves her way more vulnerable anyway. So I just think the alliance she's had from day one takes her to the end, and I think it's the best and easiest path to the win.
Okay, one last question before we wrap up then. We talked about how we view Kim, how we would place Kim on a list of female players and of winners if she were to win. If Jonas were to win the season, how would he rank?
That's tough to answer right now. I think he would be a very good player. I'm not sure he would necessarily be someone I'd consider a top player, but that depends on the way that he would navigate through the game. Now, if, like I said earlier, he is able to boot Kim and Chelsea at 12 and 11 and then just run this thing down from 10, I think it's, he's certainly a top 20 player of all time. But I kind of trust, I don't trust that he has that in him, and I just, ultimately, I think the girls are going to gain control, so I think, that's just not the likeliest scenario right now. But I think if he's able to pull it off, he's absolutely one of the, 20 or 25 best players to ever play the game.
Yeah, this might be an odd comparison, but I think I'd put him around, in the same kind of category as people like Aris, where they're maybe not the most strategic winners, and there are certain deficiencies in their skill sets, but they're pretty good players overall.
I think that's pretty fair, actually. Yeah, absolutely. The Merge is next episode. We already see the Merge. We're going to see how all of this plays out next Wednesday. And as far as then, just to remind everyone, the game is afoot. Koff, thank you very much for coming on. We have been dying to have you on for a long time. You killed it. Thank you very, very much for being here.
Hey, I appreciate it. I had a blast with you guys. Let's come back anytime. Keep doing the awesome podcast. I got to say, for anyone who, for whatever reason, is listening to my podcast on this show for the first time, go back and listen to the Albert podcast. It is the best damn podcast ever made. That's the greatest 2.5 hours I ever had listening to a podcast. So you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the great work.
That means so much, buddy.
Yeah.
Truly one of the greatest survivor minds on the internet, coming from Koss. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Dom, thank you. Anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, that's it for me. Yeah, thank you again, Koss, for coming on. And thank you, guys, for listening, for making it this far. And we will see you again next week, possibly with a special guest, possibly not. We will let you know.
Absolutely. So until then, thanks for tuning in. Subscribe on iTunes, and we will see you next week.
Bye, guys.